Okay. May approach. Again, this is In Re Interest of Cole J. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, I am Mark Carraher, Lancaster County Deputy Public Defender, and I represent the appellant Cole J. in his appeal of the juvenile court's February 21st, 2018 order adjudicating him as habitually truant. At issue across this appeal is the question of whether this court will hold the state to the procedures and requirements set out by the Nebraska legislature. Because the state failed to follow proper procedure and the school failed to hold a collaborative plan with the parent present, and the county attorney never provided any community resources directly to the parent during the period alleged on the petition, Cole is requesting that this court vacate the juvenile court's adjudication order.
The school is required to use reasonable efforts, correct? It's reasonable efforts.
Your Honor, in section 79209, subsection 3, efforts is mentioned twice, referring back to subsection 2 of that same section, 79209. And the first time it's mentioned, efforts is referring to a collaborative plan to reduce the barriers towards attendance. Second, in that paragraph, efforts is mentioned again as a defense to a truancy adjudication. We believe that it's a reasonable interpretation that the efforts that the school is required to make refer to the collaborative plan to reduce the barriers that are present towards school.
So this school reached out numerous times to this parent. Numerous times.
Your Honor, because 79209 subsection 2 requires that the parent be present at a minimum at the collaborative plan meeting, it is our position that
Does the school or the state have police powers to force her to come into this meeting?
No, they do not, Your Honor.
So then, basically, if she chooses to not come to the meeting, then the juvenile can never be adjudicated. Is that your argument?
Your Honor, it is our argument that the parent is a required party.
So the answer is yes.
Yes.
The parent can thwart, just by simply being totally uninvolved, can thwart the ability of a truancy finding.
That's correct. But this does not preclude the state from seeking other measures to address the
issue.
And
what would those be?
Such as a filing under Section 43247(3)(a), which would address the parent the parent's failure to address the student's needs. And this does not require the same procedure as. It does not violate the juvenile's due process rights to seek it under that.
Is that the state's discretion, what section to pursue?
Right, and the state ought to choose the section that would be able to find the proof that the legislature set out. The legislature made this policy in 2014 under Legislative Bill 464, and they amended the compulsory attendance laws to require a collaborative plan, specifically mentioning that the parent or person having actual charge of the juvenile must be present, quote, at a minimum. They also spoke about the child in this section and put when appropriate after that. It's a reasonable statutory interpretation that they could have applied the when appropriate to the parent, but chose not to. It's important that this court hold the state to the requirement that the parent be present and that a collaborative plan meet these standards that the legislature has set out so that there's an opportunity for the school to address the issues before sending the case to juvenile court.
What were the barriers identified with this student being absent?
They didn't identify very many barriers in the collaborative plan, and which lends to the issue that the parent ought to be present, the parent ought to be a partner in addressing truancy if there's any hope of having a successful addressing of the truancy issues.
Were barriers identified such as transportation problems or kid just won't wake up, or what were the barriers identified that had to be addressed that necessitated the parent's presence?
Your Honor, it might have been transportation. I do not recall what specifically the barriers were on the collaborative plan meeting. The point that Cole is making at this time is that the collaborative plan meeting did not, because the parent was not present, it did not meet the statutory requirement that a parent be present. Furthermore, in section 43-676, subsection 2, it is required that the county attorney make efforts to refer the family to community resources. And the section specifically mentions that they must be referred to both the family and the juvenile. In this case, the resource letter, which in In Re Interest Paula H. said was sufficient for county attorney efforts, was only handed to Cole, and with instructions for him to give that to his parent. There is no confirmation on the record that this was ever provided to the parent. The county attorney was, in fact, relying upon Cole to make these efforts for them.
But there was evidence that the school was trying to reach out to the mother, and she just would not communicate.
And it is important to distinguish in this section between the school's efforts and the county attorney's efforts, because Section 43-276, subsection 2, does require the county attorney itself to make efforts to try to resolve this.
And so your position is that just handing this letter that talks about community services isn't sufficient?
Well, my position is handing it to the child with no assurance that it will ever get to the parent.
If they had mailed it to the mom, would that have been sufficient?
It might have been. The court need not decide that.
So having the child hand deliver it's not?
Well, there was no confirmation.
Well, there wouldn't have been if you mailed it either.
There could have been certified mail or something like that that could ensure that that this could have been delivered to the parent. In this case, there simply was no efforts. There was very meager efforts by the county attorney to get this letter to the parent. And when the statute specifically says the juvenile and the family must be referred to county attorney efforts to community-based resources, this is not sufficient and it's not reasonable to meet this standard. In the present case, the juvenile was also prejudiced by the court's admission of testimony and evidence of county attorney actions that took place outside the period of time alleged on the petition. Proper procedure exists and is readily available to the county attorney should they wish to amend the petition to give the juvenile its due notice that the evidence that will be presented in the trial required by Nebraska law and due process. This procedure was not followed in this case, and it prejudiced the juvenile.
How did it prejudice the juvenile? I mean, and I'll preface my remarks by I don't understand why they didn't just amend the petition either. That doesn't make sense to me. But how for the limited purpose that the judge received it, did that not just give the state an additional hurdle to get over for that limited purpose? I guess I don't understand how that prejudiced the juvenile.
Your Honor, at the point where the state was deficient in its proof on 43-276 subsection 2 about county attorney efforts, this evidence about the diversion program that took place entirely after the period alleged on the petition did show that Cole was not successful in the truancy diversion program. It did show that there were county attorney actions that took place. This court need not decide whether these actions were sufficient.
And I don't have a problem if the evidence had been received for any purpose, but the judge said it was only for the purpose of determining whether, there's shown that there was truancy during the pertinent period, has it been fixed? Is basically what. As I understand the judge's ruling, and if it's been fixed, then there's no reason to adjudicate. So that's how I understand it. I don't understand how that is, for that limited purpose, how that's prejudicial.
Your Honor, that might be appropriate evidence at a disposition hearing, but at adjudication hearing, when the only issue before the court is whether or not the allegations on the petition have been proven beyond a reasonable doubt, this evidence and this basis for jurisdiction of whether the court should take jurisdiction is an improper basis for jurisdiction and is essentially like creating a new basis of jurisdiction, such as whether the court believes the juvenile needs help. And at the point where that was considered, that's inappropriate. And it calls into question the legality of the court's adjudication order. And I would note again that at the point where the county attorney efforts were not sufficient, under 43-276 subsection 2, the court may have been considering this evidence that was outside the petition for that question of whether or not they had made those efforts.
Don't we have to give some credibility to the judge that she's only considering it for the purpose that she said she was?
Well, it's my position that the issue that she was considering it for was not a proper issue, given that the only issue that she can adjudicate on is whether or not the petition.
And all of this would have been gone if they would have just amended.
That's correct.
We wouldn't have that. We wouldn't be dealing with this issue. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. Good morning.
May it please the court and counsel. My name is John Warden. I'm with the Lancaster County Attorney's Office on behalf of the state of Nebraska, Appalee. The separate juvenile court found that between August 24th, 2016 and November 21st, 2016, appellant was habitually truant. I'm asking this court today to affirm that finding of the court. Appellant's first assignment of error is that the trial court erred in receiving testimony made outside the time period alleged in the petition. The trial court considered that testimony, mostly involving appellant's participation in the truancy diversion program, for the purpose of taking jurisdiction. Had appellant been going to school since late 2016, then this hearing in February of 2018 would not have been necessary and the court need not take jurisdiction. In State v. Carter, 255 Nebraska 591, the court found that erroneous admission of evidence is harmless error and does not require reversal if the evidence is cumulative and other relevant evidence properly admitted supports the finding by the trier of fact. And here in this case, there was Exhibits 1, 2, and 3 that were properly admitted that made a prima facie case that appellant was habitually truant between the dates alleged in the petition. Appellant's second assignment of error is that the court erred in receiving Exhibit 3 over hearsay and foundation exceptions. A district court has broad discretion in determining the sufficiency of foundation pursuant to the business records exception, and its decision will not be overturned absent abuse of discretion. And the cite for that is Chalupa v. Hartford Fire Insurance, 217 Nebraska 662. Here the trial court did have that discretion to determine the sufficiency of foundation laid. No specific mention was made to the business records exception. An appellant just made an exception that was limited to hearsay and foundation. I would argue that the student contact log Exhibit 3 did meet the requirements of the business records exception. Appellant's third assignment of error is that there was insufficient evidence of the documentation requirements by the school and the reasonable efforts required by the county attorney. And briefly, Section 43276 requires the county attorney to make reasonable efforts to refer the juvenile and his family to community-based resources. And Section 79-209 requires that at the collaborative plan meeting held by the school, certain individuals, including the student's parent, are there. And based on the efforts by the school to get in contact with appellant's mother, Ms. Jenright, I think that the school did make reasonable efforts to secure her participation in the collaborative plan. And her unwillingness to participate kind of followed through, and the county attorney would not necessarily piggyback, but the reasonable efforts that were made by the school would carry through the county attorney's efforts. And the fact that it was not shown at trial whether appellant's mother did in fact receive the county attorney resource letter, I think that those efforts were reasonable.
Using the juvenile to hand deliver the letter as opposed to some form of mail?
Your Honor, the school could have mailed the letter. I would agree with you there. However, the school did try to contact Ms. Jenright 3 times, and she was non-responsive, didn't show up at the meeting. I think that based on the fact that the appellant was there at the time of the meeting, it was reasonable for the school to hand him a letter. And state's witnesses, Ms. Brewer and Mr. Prater, followed up with appellant on a subsequent date to try to ascertain whether he had given his mother the letter.
So the county, by statute, the county attorney, you're talking about the school, county attorney must make reasonable efforts to refer the juvenile and his family to community-based resources. How is that done here?
Yes, Your Honor. That is done through providing the county attorney resource letter. It's a letter that includes a link to a website that include various community-based resources that the parent can take advantage of.
So it's just the letter?
Yes, Your Honor.
That's all the county attorney has to do is prepare a letter, give it to the school, and the school gives it to the student and the parent.
That is accurate, yes.
And here it's, there's a question whether the parent ever received it. Is that a problem? Isn't that a problem?
That, Your Honor, I believe that first it's an issue of first impression for this court, whether it's sufficient under 79-Nebraska Revised Statute Section 79-209 for the parent to be present at the collaborative meeting and where the school has made reasonable efforts. The trial courts have adjudicated juveniles where presence had not been present at collaborative plan meetings, but then to go one step further, that would be concerning, but I don't believe that it should defeat the adjudication that appellant was habitually truant between the dates alleged. In Re Samantha C., 287 Nebraska 664, the Nebraska Supreme Court dealt with the foremost purpose and objective of the juvenile code, and that is to promote and protect the juvenile's best interests. There, the Nebraska Supreme Court rejected an assertion that the authority of the juvenile court, that the authority of the juvenile court to promote and protect the juvenile's best interests under Section 43-247-3B, which is the truancy, is premised upon a school's compliance with Section 79-209. To accept that assertion would render the juvenile court's jurisdiction dependent upon an actor completely outside the control of the juvenile court. And here, I think that Ms. Jenright has demonstrated that she is outside the control of the juvenile court, the school.
Is this, though, kind of a fact-specific situation, though? I mean, you can make that argument here because she was basically uncommunicative, I think, except for one call where she tried to change, or she left a message to change the collaborative meeting, and then they called her back and nothing, and then again she was uncommunicative completely. So I mean, there may be an argument there that her, with respect to the facts of this, but if we're not in that situation, I'm not sure that the facts stay the same then, or the result stays the same.
Your Honor, I agree that the issue was not the same in Ray Samantha C., but I think that to premise any juvenile court's jurisdiction based on the actions of an outside actor would really be to take away the meaningful power to adjudicate juveniles who are habitually truant.
So in this case, when the mother was not being communicative, would it not have been better to just go ahead and file under 43 and make her the focus of the proceeding?
Your Honor, in hindsight, it may have been. I would agree with that.
So what is your response to the appellant's argument that the collaborative meeting requires the participation by the parent or parents, and if you can't bring them in, you fail?
I would say that the school's reasonable efforts to procure appellant's mother's attendance had absolved them of that statutory requirement.
So that's all. That's the test, is whether reasonable efforts were attempted as opposed to whether or not the parent actually participated?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that is the statutory language, that failure to describe reasonable efforts shall be a defense to adjudication. And also, I would like to jump back briefly on the point of Helen's first assignment of error, showing that testimony outside the dates alleged in the petition showed that the county attorney made reasonable efforts. Again, that testimony was mostly involving Helen's participation in the truancy diversion program. And again, the court was just deciding it for the purpose of taking jurisdiction. And as you mentioned, the main county attorney resources provided are through the letter and that website.
Had the state amended its petition to allege the entire period, would have that just taken care of a lot of these problems? Because the court could considered all that evidence of what happened later for that limited purpose of whether they still need to adjudicate, but that would have shown parental involvement. That would have shown that she couldn't, that the juvenile court judge couldn't consider all of that. So I guess I don't understand why the case was postured the way it was.
Yes, Your Honor, it is true that had the state amended its petition to include those dates of appellant's participation in the truancy diversion program, it could have adduced that evidence and testimony during appellant's participation.
Would it have been the functional equivalent of a collaborative team meeting that would have been in evidence then with the parent?
Your Honor, I'm not sure if it would have been the functional equivalent of a collaborative plan meeting, but it definitely would have showed more efforts given to the juvenile to correct the adjudicated issues that were ultimately adjudicated. I would also add that again, the state did make case through exhibits 1, 2, and 3 that showed that appellant was habitually truant between those dates, so that if it was error for the juvenile court to consider testimony outside the dates alleged in the petition, that error was harmless. Okay. If there are no other questions, I will submit it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there any time left for rebuttal? No. All right. The matter is submitted. Thank you both very much. You're excused.